Now, I'm particularly excited to interview our next guest, who is one of the most prominent voices advocating for Jewish and Israeli causes in the United States. Dylan Hossier is the CEO and national co-chair of ICAN, which is the Israeli-American Civic Action Network, a group founded in 2018 to empower Israeli-Americans to shape U.S. policy, fight anti-Semitism, and defend Israel at the civic level. From battling BDS in California to confronting anti-Semitism in the American school curricula, ICAN is known for taking bold and at times controversial positions. And Dylan joins us now to unpack the strategy behind that activism, his own personal journey, and what lessons South African Jewry might draw from the American fight for Israel on the home front. And a reminder that if any of you want to ask a question, you just need to WhatsApp me on 061-895-1019, and I'll happily pose your question to Dylan. Dylan, thank you so much for chatting with us on The Home Run. If you don't mind, I'd like to start with your identity. You are not Jewish, and yet you lead one of the loudest pro-Israel advocacy voices in the United States. What drew you to this work, and how has your, and I don't know if it's correct to say in inverted commas, outsider status, but how has not being Jewish helped or complicated your mission?
So first of all, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you in your evening, early evening, and my early morning here in Los Angeles. Thank you for the question. I would say it's a little bit of both. It makes it easier in some ways and more difficult in others. What drove me to it was accidental. I would say I have grown up in Los Angeles. There's a large Jewish community here. There's a large Israeli community here. The largest population of Israelis outside of Israel is in Southern California. My first job at a high school was at an Israeli engineering company, so I learned how Israeli offices operate and how executives may seem like they're yelling at each other, but they're just having a meeting. So I've always had kind of a connection and affinity for Israelis and for Jews, for Jewish people. But I had an opportunity after grad school to work for Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs at their consulate here in Los Angeles, serving as political officer. And in that capacity, working in an office like that, and that's an important foreign mission for the state of Israel around the world. So working in an office like that, I saw that there was first and foremost a big gap in the United States as it relates to advocacy around Israel, where we have in large part subcontracted out our voice, our advocacy, from the Israeli-American perspective to the American Jewish community or to the Christian Zionist community. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But as somebody who is a student of political science, the best and most authentic way to advocate is to have the people who are from that country advocate and talk about their homeland. And so to me, it seemed obvious that this is a missing piece of the puzzle in the United States. And it's been an honor and a privilege to help create that vehicle for Israelis in the United States to kind of come out of the shadows of this notion of, you've left Israel, you've immigrated away. There's this stigma called Yordim, or this notion of the opposite of Aliyah. So that's, I think, a nonsensical kind of a stigma nowadays. Immigration happens. We should be proud to have Israelis in our countries around the world. And here in the United States, we think they're an important voice for advocacy around Israel. They're an authentic voice for advocacy around Israel.
Well, as you correctly say, your organization, ICAN, which stands for Israeli-American Civic Action Network, that is a group that hasn't traditionally been as politically active as other Jewish communities. How are you empowering them to shape civic life and U.S. policy?
So the first task there is to first let them know that they can make a difference in the United States and in American politics. I think there's a misconception that, America's a big country, it's a complicated political system, and American Jews are a small percentage of that. Israelis are an even smaller percentage of that. So there's a misconception that because of this massive difference between populations and population size that Israelis in America can't make a difference. And that's simply not true. First of all, we have not heard from the Israeli community enough in American political discourse, in my opinion. So that authentic voice is a very unique contribution that this community can make. So we are very proud that we take delegations of Israeli Americans with pro-Israel Americans like myself to City Hall, to the state capitol, and even to Congress to meet their legislators and to tell their stories. And of course, we work on concrete activism and advocacy as well in supporting and opposing specific legislation.
As you say, you take delegations into city halls, school boards, state legislatures, particularly in California. Why focus on state and local activism rather than national lobbying? And how effective has that model been?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because that is the question that we need to be asking in America right now. And it's a question that we've not been asking enough. So historically, and again, I've been doing this now for over 20 years, I guess, this question about state and local as it relates to Israel advocacy has been completely dismissed. Most people focus on federal because that's where foreign policy happens. And that's reasonable. That's a logical conclusion. However, the reality is that anti-Israel elements, groups, forces have embedded themselves within state and local politics. And whether we like it or not, whether it makes logical sense or not to talk about Israel or Israel-related issues at the state and local level, the reality is that Israel's opponents have taken it there. So as it relates to school curricula, for example, these activists have gotten into our school boards. They've gotten into our city councils. They're advocating for these ceasefire resolutions and for these anti-Semitic, anti-Israel lesson plans. So we simply have to be there. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we look at New York as a cautionary tale. Look at Zohran Mamdani. Mm. ICANN flagged him back on, I checked our system. We flagged him back on July 6th of 2023 as a problem. Why? Because he introduced a piece of anti-Israel, frankly, it's one of the most anti-Semitic pieces of legislation I've seen in my life, which essentially would outlaw Jewish organizations that do anything with the state of Israel. And this is a state-level bill. The danger here, and because the pro-Israel or the Israel advocacy community has almost exclusively focused on the federal level historically, this has created a massive gap for Islamists to enter our local and state government infrastructure and to push their agenda. And we're seeing it with New York right now, front and center.
One of your most public campaigns involved leaked footage of Los Angeles's teachers allegedly pushing a pro-Palestinian narrative. Now, some praised it as a wake-up call, but others said it crossed ethical lines. What's your take on the backlash?
So I'm proud of that backlash. Actually, I don't think it crossed ethical lines. The producers of that conference live streamed that video on their a public platform on Facebook. We were just smart enough to capture it before they could delete it. So we're out there. We are watching what our opponents are doing, and we're watching the messages that they're putting out, and anything that they're going to say publicly for the open airwaves, we're happy to capture it. And we got very fortunate circumstances in this case to capture that video. Hour-long footage of some of the most, again, anti-Semitic planning at the local level on how to avoid the law. And this is important because that conference happened about a year ago, August 2024. For those who don't know, this is a teachers union, one of the largest teachers unions in the United States. The video shows teachers coordinating and trying to figure out how to avoid laws that prevent anti-Semitic content from entering into the classrooms. So this video was published on Facebook. quickly deleted, but we downloaded it before they deleted it. And actually, this is important because now today in Sacramento, they're actually debating this exact issue around anti-Semitism in the classroom. And our legislators need to know that teachers' unions, the people who are opposing these laws, the people who are endorsing and supporting candidates for public office, this is what the teachers' unions do, are actually working against the lawmakers. So that video is important evidence now in legislative proceedings that we hope will influence good policy at the end of the day.
Dylan Eichen has strongly opposed California's ethnic studies curriculum, claiming it marginalizes Jewish and Israeli identity. But critics say you're silencing other minority narratives. How do you balance protecting your community without erasing others?
So that's a really great, and again, phenomenal question. That's a great clarifying question, because it what you have to do is first ask, what is ethnic studies? And I'll tell you, for me, myself, I was confused about what ethnic studies was just until this last year. I, like most, believed that it is what it sounds like. Ethnic studies sounds like we want to learn about the beautiful diversity of ethnicities around the world and their role in shaping our society. Unfortunately, that's not what ethnic studies is. Ethnic studies, if you look at the actual curriculum, and again, I don't want to sound like a crazy person saying this, but it is an Islamo-Marxist curriculum. It is pushing resistance. Literally, if you go to the California Department of Education, there's a 700-page manual on ethnic studies. It is an Islamo-Marxist text. It is pushing fringe ideologies, and it is working against the United States, against capitalism, against Western values structures and systems. So that's what we're opposed to. We're opposed to that Islamo-Marxist kind of framing and that framework and putting this in our classrooms. I was shocked when I read that curriculum. I'm even more shocked and disappointed to know that there were mainstream, large national Jewish organizations who neglected to read that document and put their stamp of approval on it just for political reasons to make the politicians happy. So we're fighting against that that kind of framework. And actually, to answer your question, we're encouraging those lessons and those stories from those ethnicities to replace this kind of Islamo-Marxist framing. I'd rather hear about the Mexican-American experience in the Southwest as opposed to how capitalism is oppressive and destroying society. Mm. So that's the distinction between ethnic studies and what we call multicultural education.
In June, your network condemned a Gaza-related resolution at the LA City Council, saying that it erased Israeli identity and promoted Hamas propaganda. How do you decide when a symbolic resolution crosses the line into incitement? And are you ever concerned about public overreach?
How we decide is actually pretty simple. In that case that you've cited there with Los Angeles, if you read the text of that resolution, it reads like it was written by a Hamas spokesperson. I've been doing this for a long time, and I was shocked at language I saw. It was entirely one-sided. I don't think it mentioned the word terrorism or terrorist at all in the text. When we're looking for balance, we're looking for, you know, actual balance in the text itself. What was interesting, by the way, if you look at a big city like Los Angeles an issue like global conflict, we have the Israel-Gaza example or Israel-Hamas example, but we also have the Russia-Ukraine example. Los Angeles, prior to putting out this resolution about Israel and Gaza, had a resolution about Russia and Ukraine. You know, we have a large Russian population here, a large Russian Jewish population too, by the way, here in Los Angeles. And if you look at the conflict, the resolution that dealt with the conflict with Russia and Ukraine, the Los Angeles City Council very rightly said, we condemn the war, we condemn the violence, you know, whatever the position is. But then they had a very special section that said, we recognize the Russian community and the Ukrainian community in Los Angeles. Nothing here is meant to besmirch them or meant to delegitimize their culture or community. We didn't see that with the Israel-Gaza or Israel-Hamas resolution. There was nothing in there that acknowledged the local Jewish community, which is fine. Israel-Gaza is not a Jewish issue necessarily, but if you want to make it that way, and by the way, that's what major Jewish organizations want. They want to separate themselves from that conflict, from that way. Rightly so, I think. But when they ignore what effect that that rhetoric and that language has on the local domestic Israeli American population, that is erasure. Mm-hmm. And that is disenfranchising and marginalizing a community. And so we do absolutely oppose. Besides the fact that the resolution was entirely one-sided, it also completely erased an entire community that lives and works and contributes to society here in LA.
One of the stories that we've been following is the sharp rise of anti-Semitism in the United States. And it often looks very different from the classic far-right version. What trends are you most alarmed by? And what are your network's most effective tools to push back?
So to me, the most alarming thing, and it's almost now a daily occurrence. And again, I have to say, as somebody who's not Jewish, we have this phrase in the Israel advocacy space, or even the Jewish advocacy space, of the as a Jew. As a Jew, I say this. Well, for me, as a non-Jew, I will say that I am surprised and shocked at how American society is shape-shifting, you know, over these times now. And we're seeing it, by the way, on both sides, from the far left and the far right. I guess I'm most surprised at how normalized it has become in our society. And it affects almost every part of our lives. For me, myself, I had an incident that happened. Again, I'm not Jewish, but I had an incident that happened just over the weekend here in Los Angeles that was disturbing. I won't get into specifics, but, you know, these kinds of things shouldn't happen in a healthy society. So to me, the normalization is what is most concerning. And the most effective tool to push back, I say this, it's going to sound sarcastic or tongue-in-cheek, but it is Jewish moms, actually. You know, if you look at American politics, and if you study American politics, there part of the art of winning is building good coalitions. And the best coalition builders that I've seen in this fight are Jewish moms. So in American politics, we have soccer moms and hockey moms. Well, in pro-Israel or Jewish advocacy, we have Jewish moms. And they have been phenomenal at recognizing the threats that their children are facing in the K-12 school system. And they have a 360-degree awareness of what's going on in their community and in their neighborhood. And they are going to fight and go as far as necessary to protect their children and protect their family. So to me, thank God, the secret weapon we have are Jewish moms who are willing to fight and step up and address this anti-Semitism wherever it is.
I'm smiling while you say that, but it is the perfect answer. I've never heard that before. But I mean, it was there staring us in the face all along, Jewish moms. Dylan Hosier, the CEO and national co-chair of the Israeli-American Civic Action Network, thank you for giving us insight in what it takes to fight for Israel, not from Jerusalem or from Tel Aviv, but from city councils and classrooms across the United States. And whether or not our listeners agree with your methods or not, there's no denying the urgency of the work. And there's surely something in it for us to learn too. It was a pleasure chatting with you. And I could have chatted with you for another hour. So perhaps we'll just have to do it another time. Thank you for your time.